Welcome to the Athletic MBA Show,
Monday through Friday,
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Doncic gets in the paint, floats it into Porzingis, knocked out of his hand, safe to Kleba. Kleba back out, Doncic, three-pointer, bang! Luka Doncic from downtown, and the lead is 7 with 43 seconds remaining.
Bruh. New York strip steak?
Ooh! This is the Basketball Buds.
Brazen. Beef short ribs? Dang!
With Zach Harper and your favorite athletic writers.
Get mad at me, bro. I'm gone.
Welcome to the Basket Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show podcast on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm Zach Harper. Joining me today, Trevon Edwards, Wozni Lambre, the birthday king. We got Dave DeFore, we got Jay King, an actual other king. And today we've got a Durant COVID fiasco, players hate the All-Star game idea, we got a trade for the Knicks, and we got a Luka Steph showdown from Saturday night. But guys, we're going to start out with this Kevin Durant COVID fiasco from Friday night, and it kind of feeds into a really bad PR week for the NBA, right? Like a really, really bad one. We had courtside Karen with LeBron in Atlanta. And then we had the All-Star game announcement.
How'd you say that with a straight face?
It's really hard. It's really, really hard. We had the All-Star game announcement of the Players Association and the NBA agreeing that March 7th, we're going to have an All-Star game. Then we had LeBron coming out and saying, yo, this is a slap in the face. Like, they told us we weren't going to have it. I thought I was going to have the time off. This sucks. Like, I'm going to be there physically, but not mentally. Giannis echoed those sentiments. Even De'Aaron Fox called the idea stupid to have the All-Star game. James Harden had these comments after Friday night's Nets loss about the All-Star game maybe isn't a good idea. I think Joe Harris said it as well. Also, odd that I don't think he needs to comment on the All-Star game. But this is coming from a bad week that was capped off by Kevin Durant due to contact tracing, not allowed to start the game. Then they say, hey, get out there and be somebody, KD. Get in the game. He plays like 19 minutes? And then they say, oh, whoa, 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 whoa. That contact tracing? We got some results. You got to get out of here. You've got exposure to it. And it turns out that he was riding around three different times during the day with a team employee, both not wearing masks apparently. And now this person has tested positive for COVID. And so Woz, like, from a PR standpoint, without anybody getting a health consequence that is bad from this, could this have gone any worse for the NBA this week? Because it does feel like all the lumps that MLB took, all the lumps that the NFL and college football took, they're now falling on the NBA because, by the way, this shit is hard to execute with travel during a pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not laughing because it's funny that the team employee, tested positive for COVID. It's not funny. It's just, obviously, it's a serious situation. People are dying from this virus, right? But at the same time, like, KD's playing half a game, then they're deciding in the middle of it to take him out. It's like, what are we doing here, right? And like you mentioned, with MLB, with college football, with the NFL, like, they did take their lumps, right? But I feel like because at that point so much was happening with the pandemic, I think people kind of gave them the benefit of the doubt, like, all right, this is just what it's going to be. And the NBA, having come off of the bubble where they had no issues to be dealing with this, I think that's why it's drawing more attention to it. It's like, you did this correctly already. We watched you do it the right way, and now we're watching you guys go up in flames. It's tough. It's tough if you're Adam Silver right now.
You know, it could have been a great week for them. You know, we had a really good – they had no new positive tests this week. That should have been a really good story for them, and yet they ruined it, you know, because of money, right? They ruined it with the All-Star announcement. That is convenient. That's a good point. But no new COVID positive tests, and we're taking that at face value. That's great news. That means that they actually are getting things under control. But then they, again, ruined it from a public relations standpoint, because everybody thinks your All-Star game is stupid. It's an exhibition that is a luxury under normal circumstances, given how, you know, the risk of injury and these guys not getting the time off and all of these other things. Like, it's already a luxury. And now, in a time where the entire league depends on these guys, you know, not getting COVID, right? Like, keeping the season going. You're going to bring in dudes from every single team to one place and potentially create this super spreader event.
Open city, Dave.
They're going to be at Magic City eating those wings. And all of a sudden the league is going to have to shut down for 6 weeks. Man, and it's just, I'm sorry, man. It's just fucking stupid. Shoot. It's fucking stupid. it's so frustrating. You know, it's just frustrating. But
also, dear NBA, please cancel this All-Star game.
Grow up.
Yo,
it's,
man,
irresponsible. Look, listen. Let me get this PTA off real quick. PSA, sorry. Dear NBA, please cancel this All-Star game in Atlanta. It's irresponsible, and the party center around it would put large portions, especially in the Black community, directly in contact with COVID-19. So, if you care about Black people, if you care about all people, first of all, and the athletes that are in this organization, do not have the All-Star game in Atlanta. Thank you.
This is obviously, look, the reason this is happening is, I don't know how much money Turner makes from All-Star Weekend revenue and everything, right? But, like, that's the reason it's happening. It's the reason Christmas Day happened, right?
Right.
Is because ESPN, the major TV partner, along with TNT, like, ESPN owns Christmas Day. You're not going to give up that ad revenue. TNT owns All-Star Weekend. They're not going to give up that ad revenue or as much of it as they can possibly save. So that's the reason this is happening. Mm-hmm. If they were to move it away from Atlanta, if they were to move it to a more secure location, maybe set up a mini bubble or whatever. Like, Jay, do you think this would be more well received, or is this an Atlanta thing? Is this a pandemic thing? Like, what do you think is going on here?
It's just bringing all the teams together, players from all the teams together, is why this is looked at as such a stupid idea. I mean, when you think about it, each team has 72 games. That's thousands of games this year. This is just adding one game to that. The problem is that you're bringing everybody together. And it doesn't matter where that is. It could be in Atlanta. It could be in Antarctica. It could be wherever. Like, just in this time, bringing everybody together and then sending them off their separate ways to their separate teams where they could then become spreaders in a bigger sense. That's the problem with it. I mean, I think it's just so tough to navigate in a pandemic. But there are some situations where it's like, why would you even consider an All-Star game? Why?
We get 4 Charlotte Hornets, Orlando Magic games a year. Do we really need any other exhibitions?
And I think LeBron's criticism spoke volumes, because he's always been a guy that has said, I don't want to load manage because I know fans are there to watch me. Every All-Star game he goes and he puts on a show, and he's all for it because he knows how much it means to the fans and how much it means to the game. For him to say, I'll be there physically, but I won't be there mentally, that is a huge, huge
critique.
It's a
fan game with no fans.
The most important player in the game.
So let me just say this.
Well, Atlanta's going to have fans there. Like,
as,
I know.
As the, you know, what are we doing? Sort of NBA logic.
Yeah, Atlanta was
where
Courtside Karen was.
72 games. This is one other game.
Yes.
Like, in the context of 72 games that everybody's playing, these guys are going and playing one game. I get why they're like, what's the big deal? From a Turner standpoint, from a league standpoint, from a business partnership standpoint, I get that part of it, right? Like, we're already playing. So go play again and get me this money. I understand it. Like, I obviously agree with everything you guys are saying. It's not the smartest or safest or it doesn't look good. No. It's like the trifecta there, but I understand why they're doing it. Cause it's like, we're already chasing these bags. We're going to chase this one too. You know, it's sad. It's unfortunate, but that's what it is.
All-star games can be weird without fans, man. Like, regular games are weird without fans, but God, I feel like the fans are the only thing that makes an all-star game. Like, I hate the all-star game in the first place. I think the all-star game is so dumb. I wish it was competitive. And last year's was actually fun because guys actually cared a little bit with the Elam ending. But without fans, like, that whole spectacle is just going to feel a lot less.
Guys, they're going to have fans. It's Atlanta. They're going to have fans in the stands. They just allowed someone courtside.
I guess that's
true. And this person was yelling at LeBron James without a mask.
But there won't be many.
There won't be many, right. It's going to be emptier than we would normally see.
Kevin Hart's going to be there.
Right? Kevin Hart will 100% be there. Will they let him sit courtside? I don't know. Because he talks so much, he might end up being at risk of spreading everything. But they're going to be fans there. I do wonder. Look, this is the first time, like, LeBron's come out and said things before of like, I'm only playing for the, like a year ago, right? We were kicking around the idea of like, hey, they may have games without fans. And everyone's like, what? That's crazy. Now look at us, right? A year later. Right. But he came out and said, hey, I'm not playing if there aren't fans in the stands. Like, I've come here to play for the fans. That's why I play, whatever, right? He's come out and spoken out and taken hard stances before, but it's always been kind of riding with where the money is for the league, where the money is for him. This is the first time where he's come out and been like, nah, this sucks. Like, this is a slap in the face. This is bullshit. And now I think he's still going to go. It sounds like he's still going to go. And I think as you get closer to the event, as you get the bright lights, as you get those moments, I think he'll buy in. I think Giannis will buy in. Giannis, you know, came out and said, we're following him. This doesn't seem necessary. James Harden said, this is a bad idea. Why are we even having this? I think if he buys in, everyone else will buy in. I do wonder, Trey, do you think there will be players who opt out for non-injury reasons?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I think it becomes a bigger issue. The crazy thing is, it just shows how much miscommunication is there and what needs to be patched up in the next weeks moving forward. But yeah, I think there's going to be guys that's opting out. And then also we're going to get those strange replacement all-stars that, you know, maybe Mike Conley does get in. Maybe.
So you saying they're going to treat it like the Pro Bowl?
Pretty much. Pretty much.
People get selected and just straight up don't show up.
Yo, 100% Taysom Hill will be in the NBA All-Star game.
Facts. But yeah, no. I mean, at this point, you know, you got, as they say, the big dog not rolling with it. And then you got other guys that aren't even, might not even be All-Stars saying it's dumb, giving their two cents. I mean, I could see a heel turn on this situation, but you know, the same way players are risking their lives every day suiting up to play, it is what it is. You know what I mean? It's all about money and they should know that. You know what I mean? Like every time, even the frustration is they knew it was going to be a gamble. And if you like to get paid, then this is what it's going to be. So I think that we'll still get our All-Star game, but I think it's dumb.
I wonder how much of this from the player's perspective is not just COVID related and not just safety related, and them just reacting from a manner of they didn't think the All-Star game was going to be played. There was talk that the All-Star game wasn't going to be played.
Booked for the Bahamas already.
Yeah, and you expect 5 days off or a week off from work, and now you're getting told, okay, you're going to have to go to work. I'd be pissed.
But Jay, they make millions of dollars to play a game.
I'd be pissed. And in LeBron's case, in the case of a lot of the best players in the league, they only had a 2-month offseason. They didn't have nearly as much time to spend with their families as usual after being in the bubble for months away from families. And so this has just been a tough, tough stretch for players from a personal standpoint. I know it's been a tough stretch for everybody in the world and everybody has had to adapt. But getting told you get 7 days off and expecting to go home or go on vacation or see people you love and then being told, nah, we're going to Atlanta and you're risking your life for a little more money, that's tough to swallow.
Yeah, and I think even like the comments from Giannis, like, right, like he said, I want to see my family. Right. Like that. I mean, and granted, he had extra time off because only a few geniuses saw that he was going to lose to the Heat. Jay, I don't know if you remember that, but, you know, that notwithstanding, there, you know, like guys, look, you get to see your family a little bit, it sounds like, but it's not like, yo, I get 7 days with my kid. Right. Like there is that very human aspect of it where whether they wanted to go to the Bahamas or they wanted to be with their family or be with their family in the Bahamas or whatever, right? Or just unplug and just, you know, try to get your head around it. Yes, they get paid $1 million. Yes, they have, you know, incredible wealth. But at the same time, everything's relative. And regardless of what you make, you're going to have different pressures. But there is still this very real thing of like, I need to be able to process everything that's going on. And that's very like in the moment, Waz, I think you see them, you know, being able to block out a lot because you got to focus on the game and everything. But if in any walk of life right now, there is a certain point where your mental health, regardless of your situation, like that's something you have to be aware of throughout this past year.
Yeah, it is important. And I think what the league is banking on is that these guys are gamers, and I think they kind of proved it in the bubble that when they need to, they can summon the will to make it happen, right? Even under adverse circumstances, they can figure out how to make the All-Star game something worth looking at. So they're kicking and screaming right now, but I think the league and Turner is just counting on these guys, one, level of professionalism, and two, just love for what they do. So they might be sulking now, but they're going to get out there and make it right. So it is what it is, man. I mean, like,
let's take the pandemic part of this out of it. Like, take the public health and safety part of it out of it. And just think about the players' health and safety. This is the most condensed season they've ever had. We already know how much more this contributes to injuries. And now you're going to take these guys who, you know, I mean, I think Utah, they had 37 games scheduled in the first 71 days of the season. Well, you know, Donovan Mitchell, hey, go fly to Atlanta, hang out, play this extra game. That means nothing. It's silly. It's just silly.
Yeah, I mean, it's – well, all right, so back to the Kevin Durant Friday night fiasco tie into this. Dave, you've talked with – a lot of experts on health experts on Nerder, She Wrote. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, like I've been happy with the fact that the NBA has come out often throughout this, I guess, experiment or execution, whatever you want to call it, of the season. And they've been kind of changing things on the fly, right? Like this is, look, there's a surge here. So we've got to lockdown protocols here, and here, right? Like they've mm-hmm. tried to like move the goalposts in a good way to figure out what works best for keeping players relatively healthy. And then Friday night happens and they use, well, with an abundance of caution.
Right.
Right. Like we do. And it was that phrasing. I think people were already confused and upset at what was happening with Kevin Durant and how he was treated and how he was allowed to play and then not play and everything, and very confused by that. But when you then come out and say with an abundance of caution, mm-hmm. that's like, that's, you know, that's me saying, no, I didn't steal your shoes. By the way, I'm wearing your shoes. Right. Right? Like, right. Like, no, like, like
an abundance of caution is he never gets into the game. Right.
Right. Yeah. That's, I mean, an abundance of caution is we don't have a season. That's an abundance of caution. Right. Yeah. Like, yeah, you're right. Like he doesn't get into the game. And so, yes, they're moving this stuff around, but then you come out and use a poor word choice to mm-hmm. describe the situation. I think, like, I don't know if you could actually admit to this if you're the league, but I think it would have been better if they had come out and just like, yeah, we got this one wrong.
I mean, I agree with you, but I respect when people admit their mistakes. And, right. You know, corporations aren't really well known for that. They'd rather pay a bunch of money later, usually, right? All the people that I've talked to in the last few months about what the NBA is doing now, and we haven't had any of them on the pod, because it's kind of a tough spot. Almost everybody thinks the NBA is blowing it. The health and safety protocols, they look good in theory, but the practice, as we've seen, has been poor. And I would say the Kevin Durant situation is incredibly unique because he is still registering antibodies. And so there's an aspect of this that feels a lot like theater, but I completely understand having a blanket policy that just covers everyone. I think that I want to give them the benefit of the doubt. And this is, you know, as a layman, I'm just looking in. I want to give them the benefit of the doubt and say that Kevin Durant's unique circumstances, still producing antibodies, is part of why there was so much confusion going into that game. Now, I don't think that they'll ever tell us. But again, if I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt, I think that that's got to be part of it. Because realistically, he should have been able to play if he's registering antibodies. You're not worried about him in theory.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm with you. Like, I'm okay. But if they had said like, yo, no, we're going to use an abundance of caution here, you can't play tonight. And he's like, what the hell? I'm registering antibodies. You said that, like, I would respect them saying, no, we just got to do this to make sure. We're sorry you're frustrated, but we just got to make sure. But you can't start the game. Hey, get in there. Hey, you got to get out of here. What are you doing on the court?
This isn't like, the first time it's happened.
Right.
That's the thing. How does it happen? I guess I can understand it happened one time. Oops. How does it happen more than once? That's the thing that I cannot wrap my head around. Like, it seems like a lot of money to be on the line, to be sorting things out on the fly. And certainly you're going to run into problems that you didn't plan for. But all of this seems like predictable stuff to me.
Yeah. I mean, Trey, how do you think, like, I know obviously their comments were very public and very, very against what the NBA had decided and done. But the Nets team as a whole, this not only affected them in that game. I mean, Steve Nash came out and said, like, yeah, I was a little distracted by this whole Kevin Durant situation in game, right? Like, I don't know that I was as focused as I should have been in coaching them. They lose a tough one, and then they come out, and now he's not available until Friday due to the protocol. And, you know, they lose another game. Like, they've got guys in and out of the lineup here that maybe they were expecting to have. Like, how do you think the Nets are, with a couple of days of breathing room, looking at this entire situation?
I think they just need to better assess. I mean, it was so much on-the-fly frustration, especially from James Harden. And then you got guys like even Joe Harris and, you know, Jeff Green. Everybody just sounded off because it was just kind of like, you know, James Harden was like, okay, we got Kevin. Cool. No, we don't have Kevin. Cool. Okay, wait, he's on the bench. Okay, wait, they're pulling him a third. And it was just like, what are we doing? I was just with him every day. You know what I mean? Like, are we not supposed to play? How are we able to play and he's not able to play? You know what I mean? Like, in those situations, and it, you know, obviously the same thing with Nash is like, you know, no one, it's too much uncertainty. And I understand, you know, the frustration that's going on from there, and then having to go, especially when they want to stay in like the top three in the Eastern Conference, you know what I mean? And you have to drop games because of contact tracing, and that messes up chemistry too. Or a flow that you're trying to go. So I think this is also a difficult year. You know what I mean? It's probably going to be the most difficult for a lot of teams that are losing players. I think the only one that has it pretty much locked down is the Lakers. They got like a system figured out where nothing's really going on over there. Like, you know, I'm not sure what's happening here in New York, but it seems like it's an everlasting problem right now in the situation of fluctuation of contact, you know, tracing.
Yeah, oddly enough, I think the Lakers, Clippers, and Jazz have been the teams least affected by health and safety protocols. I could be wrong on that, but I think so. And they might be the three best teams in the league.
I've got a conspiracy theory about that.
Uh-oh.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Get the conspiracy music, Jade.
I wouldn't be surprised if the Lakers have been vaccinated.
Ooh. Wow. I'd be surprised.
Wow.
And just didn't say anything about it.
I need explosions. I need sirens, Jade. Like, oh my goodness.
Like, because it doesn't make sense that they would just have nothing.
Look, they could isolate people easily who live here
in Los Angeles.
Yeah, 1 in 3 testing right now are positive.
Okay.
In LA.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean,
so they just straight up haven't had one thing happen.
Or a lot of those guys have already had it. I mean, we are a year into this.
Sure.
At this point.
Maybe. Sure. Yeah.
Like, sure. The Lakers could potentially, you know.
Somebody said to me, Dave, yesterday was like, well, it's a team full of family men.
That's okay. How that works.
Yeah.
Oh, that's how it works, right? Cool.
I said, all right.
I've always said Kyle Kuzma seems like just a family man.
It is. Well, hold on, though. It is an older team, right? It is an older team. That is a good point, right? And we do know a few of those guys have had it. So, I mean, I don't know. No, we're a year in. I would say I doubt they've been vaccinated.
I don't know.
I kind of love this conspiracy theory.
I love it. I love this conspiracy. I'm with you, Jay. I'm in on this.
It's one of those things I feel like.
The Lakers are just LeBron with the Lakers came or that into Russell training Westbrook camp video.
It was like, look.
Russell Westbrook eating on the bench video. That's just the Lakers with the vaccine. Just
Right. LeBron came into training camp and said, listen, guys, I have a vaccine plug. We're all going to take it. We're all going to be fine. All these other idiots are going to keep testing positive and miss games and do all of this stuff, and we're not. That's what it feels like is happening.
I love the implications of this.
I love it.
That would be the greatest performance-enhancing drug you could get for this year.
Be careful now, J.K. Be careful.
What about a performance-sustaining drug? Can we call it that?
Performance sustaining.
I mean, PSD. A vaccine is a drug. They get to play. They get to sustain play on the court. You know, they get to perform. You order those words properly.
I need more wise conspiracy theories.
Well, I got a take that might be too hot, guys. If we want to play our new segment, the take is hot.
Yes.
Uh-oh. I like it.
Here's a take. You remember back in 2017 when a lot of people said, hey, Russell Westbrook's team is barely over 500. They're not even a 50-win team. There's no way he can be MVP. It's got to be James Harden. It's got to be Kawhi Leonard, right? Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see the same energy as the kids say on the internet with this Nikola Jokic campaign. That team's not very good. That team's 12-10. I don't think his numbers should qualify him for MVP if we're going to keep that same energy. Is that take too hot? Or was the take back 4 years ago with Russell Westbrook just stupid?
No, it's a great take. It's a great take.
Why aren't we getting that same conversation, Waz?
I think anybody's got it so weird.
Yeah, nobody has him as the front runner, right, Waz?
Nah, people are calling him the front runner for sure.
He's my front runner.
LeBron.
Yeah,
there you go.
Essentially,
1 in 5.
I mean, they had a rough start.
Jokic ain't getting no damn MVP.
Oh yeah, no,
it's not happening.
I just want to see the same people who made that argument about Russell Westbrook say the same thing about Nikola Jokic right now.
See, it, was that
his team the, starts winning games.
Was that the I argument against just, Westbrook?
There was a huge argument against Westbrook about they're not a 50-win team. He can't be MVP.
My argument back then was just that James Harden was better. And James Harden was better at everything except recording triple-doubles. Better.
Oh, see, so, I had Kawhi as MVP that season.
Ooh.
But best player, that was my, on a 60-win team.
What I thought too, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He was great.
Yeah, he was awesome.
The Thunder that year, 6 seed. Nuggets currently, 6 seed.
People were put off by the stat padding. That's why people were making that argument against Westbrook. They felt a way about Steven Adams, you know, clearing the lane so that Russ could get his little rebound stats.
Oh, what about this assist hunting from Jokic?
Right.
Was, huh?
Oh, is he doing that?
I don't know. No, probably not. But they all seem pretty natural. But, you know, if we're going to make, you know, stat padding discussions, why not accuse him of that? He was padding stats the other night against the Kings by playing against them and dropping 50, right? Like,
by not having COVID, he was stat padding.
Right. He's stat padding by not having COVID.
You know, the thing I'll say about Jokic is this. So they had a rough start to the year. They had a lot of weird stuff. Obviously, trying to figure out who was going to replace Jeremy Grant and Torrey Craig. They've won 7 of 9. So, or sorry, 7 of 10. So they've been a lot better, and he's obviously been awesome. And they've been somewhere between 4 and 6. I mean, you know, that grouping is so tight. You lose a game, you drop 2 spots. So yeah, I think it's just
back
like
in 2017, Dave.
Yeah, but I think like Waz said, it's such a weird season that these guys who are on, I mean, you know, obviously LeBron and Embiid are the front runners, I would argue. But the guys that are on these teams that are middle but top half of the middle, like Jokic, I think they are going to get more buzz this year. There's not, I mean, the Lakers are just cruising. And yeah, if you ask me today, pick the MVP, I'm saying LeBron, because he's going to have every single thing you want. They're going to have the best record. He's going to have all the narrative. I mean, year 18, defending the title. Like, there's so many reasons why he could win, in addition to being awesome and having being on the best team. But if the Nuggets can wind up as the 2 seed, that's when Jokic is going to have an argument.
If he does this and they're a top 3 seed in the West,
nobody's going to give Jokic any credit if he's the 6 seed. They're not. As a matter of fact, he could average a triple double. He could drag this team to a 6 seed, let's say, if we want to make an argument. And he will have people saying, "Well, how come they didn't win more games? Y'all told me Jokic was awesome."
Literally, what happened with Russ, right?
Yeah, but
Russ
I think everybody
super clutch at the end of games. Jokic is super clutch at the end of games. Mm-hmm. Like there are a lot of similarities to it.
Yeah, Russ played in a way that I felt like he always got his stats sometimes at the expense of the team. And that year was probably different because that team was not loaded at all, and they needed him to do as much as he did. But Jokic,
hold on. Are we not going to address the fact that Jokic has done this, what he's doing at the highest level of the sport in the playoffs?
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference.
Russ has had big positive playoff moments as well. Like we can't like look in the last few years, it has not been good. But there are some real similarities. There's some similarities between him and Paul George, just in the sense of like, yo, they used to have big playoff moments that mattered, and now recently it's been kind of rough.
Now they don't.
While we're talking about the Nuggets, can we just talk about how Jamal Murray is back to being Jamal Murray again?
He's back in Bubble Murray.
He just went straight back to Jamal Murray. He was the bubble god.
He was.
He really
but
was.
I think Jamal Murray is not. I think he's like, look, I kind of proved myself. I've got my contract. I know what I'm capable of doing in the biggest spots. I'm just not going to do this shit all regular season.
I mean, he's virtually the exact same player as last year by the numbers.
It's
like
crazy.
Like across the board. It is kind of wild. And what if he is just like, not Bubble Murray, but what if Playoff Murray is just like, all right, you know, I'm going to cruise through the regular season, but playoffs come.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. I got to see that one again. I'm starting to think that was just the biggest illusion we have ever seen.
Wow.
Jay King is doing his Miami Heat thing again, guys.
He's doing LaMelo Ball.
Yeah. He's doing the LaMelo thing. He's doing it unnecessarily hating. I don't understand.
Let me finish. This is not unnecessary. This is pointing out that the bubble has popped. The bubble has popped for my man Jamal Murray. I'm just saying. If I see it again, it was a one-time thing. He's never been that before. He hasn't been it during the start of the regular season since.
I disagree. He also is 23 years old or something. So, you know, like, let's
you disagree that he's never done that before?
Did you watch the playoff series? I mean, the first run that they had where they lost to Portland ahead of the Western Conference finals? He was awesome. He was awesome in that series against the Spurs. I mean, this guy, he is a playoff performer. One of the frustrating things about him is how great he plays in the playoffs, and then he's inconsistent in the regular season, right? Like, to me, that was the thing holding him back from, you know, being one of the greats. But he's a 16-game player and has been the whole time that they've made the playoffs. I mean, he's just been awesome.
Put some respect on that man's name, man.
I'm looking up his playoff stats right now. He shot 42.5%, including 33.7% from the arc during the playoff run you just mentioned.
Jay.
He was shooting 33% from behind the arc.
Yeah.
That was not like he was out there looking like Steph Curry.
Jake,
like he did this last
year. Don't talk to me like somebody that doesn't watch the games, man. Like I'm like, there's more to it than his field goal percentage.
You literally just asked me, crime. Did you watch that playoff run? White yes, I watched that playoff run.
I love it.
It is February.
Yo, Jake,
like Jay, I honestly, I know you've got synergy. Go watch it. Go watch what he was doing in those playoffs.
Yo, I gotta mute my mic, man, because y'all killing me.
This was one of my favorite moments ever. I love you, Dave.
I love you too, Jay. You made the show. But you're a hater.
I trust Trey on this. Trey, is Bubble Murray a thing or is Playoff Murray a thing? What's more believable?
I think both are. They both can exist. Okay. Because he's good. He's good. But also, you know, when those games, when you look at a guy and say, oh, he wasn't killing, it's because the team's made adjustments. And very good adjustments, especially for guards. For bigs, I think bigs can kind of still figure it out. Like, Jokic doesn't have to score that much to be effective on the court, but Jamal Murray has to score the ball. And if he's shooting bad, then the Nuggets aren't in a good place. So, I've seen Murray get jiggy on both ends. You know what I mean? I think it's more so his health. He's always leaving a game, like, oddly in, like, the third quarter or just having, like, a hothead moment that, like, costs his team in a situation. But overall, both of these are believable, and he's just, you know, I think he's on pace to be an all-star soon.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date, first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Is there any chance, one more for the take is hot. Is there any chance that Luka Doncic can finish in top five in MVP voting at this point? I know he just had a huge night.
No, sir.
They can't. They're not going to win enough.
I know.
This was my thing before the season, and you know everyone fell in love with them and the way they played in the bubble, especially in the playoffs against that Clippers team that was odd. But they just didn't have the talent, and I thought Josh Richardson was a good pickup. It hasn't worked out great in first 20 games, but we don't even know what it's going to look like because most of these guys have been out of the lineup. But I think that they're too far behind the eight ball at this point. They needed to be able to bank wins early, and they just weren't able to do it. Porzingis not looking great. He's looking better as he goes, but defensively, listless.
It's weird. Like, they have no chemistry, Luka and KP, like, on the court in terms of a two-man game. It's still not there.
They don't run that pick and pop hardly at all, and it's really weird. I don't know, man. Not quite sure what's going on. I've tried
Luka
to blame the health and safety
games
protocols
to try to get into the top five. Like 50 games is a lot of games, y'all.
But you got to win games, right? Like we just talked about with Jokic. If Jokic is the sixth seed, I'm sorry, man. I don't care. He could put up 50 points a game. I just the way that the NBA MVP award works. Like I think you have to value winning games. You got to be a great player on a team that is also great. And that was where I was with Russell Westbrook. That's where I'll be with Luka. That's where I'll be with Jokic. Any of these people trying to win MVP, like Steph Curry, if he is in the playoffs with this team, we should all say, wow, what a great job. If he's top four, with this team. Now, all of a sudden, he's in the MVP conversation. So that's where I'm at.
Steph Curry scoring 60 in a loss, making me look like a genius.
Well, if he only had 57, if he had gotten 60, they'd win that game.
Right.
You know, maybe he should have done more.
Right.
All right, let's go to the trade that is happening as of when we started recording this. By the time this is out, it might be official. But the Detroit Pistons are sending Derrick Rose not just back to the Knicks, but back with his good old pal Tom Thibodeau in exchange for Dennis Smith Jr. and I believe what will be a second round pick as compensation for draft compensation. Trey, I think this is a good move by the Knicks. For the simple fact that Derrick Rose is someone who can still get into the heart of the opposing defense and make plays. They very much lack that. It's why Emmanuel Quickley has been such a breath of fresh air for them as a rookie, because he can get into the middle of the floor and you know, create problems for everybody else. But my concern, though, as much as I do think this is a good move by the Knicks, my concern is that Quickley will be squeezed out of the rotation, because they do still have Elfrid Payton. They still have Austin Rivers as a lead guard. You know, Quickley has come on as of late, but I worry that Tom Thibodeau is going to go more veterans and maybe Quickley struggles to find a consistent role.
No, I mean, right now they got 5 guards on the depth chart. This move kind of not makes sense, but whatever. I think this is kind of an IOU for Tibbs. Tibbs always just felt bad off this injury that, you know, what happened with D Rose, and that's his guy. And he feels, you know, that a guy that knows the system and that can still contribute. It's going to be good. I don't think Derrick Rose starts. I think he'll give some, you know, some sound advice for Quickley. I think he'll come in and relieve here and there. And, you know, I think he'll be happy as well to be back with Taj and, you know what I mean, and them being able to do things, because Dennis Smith Jr. was about to go play in the G League. You know, he to find a rhythm or just enjoy basketball again. And then now he gets to end up in a situation where they actually needed a guard. I don't know if it turns water to wine, but, you know, it's a new start for him. And then also they're still stuck with Frankie Smokes. You know, they're still stuck with Peyton. So they still have some pieces to move around, you know what I mean, to make this look like a genius move. I still think it's not the best move, but, you know, how they're playing, I think they're 6 in the East now. If Derrick Rose can contribute, that's a win. They won the trade at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the Knicks can they get so Joe Noah? he's a well, did he retire? I don't remember what happened.
Yeah, I don't know. What's the wall up to? Away. Let's just play the hits, man. You know,
is Keith Bogans available?
Seth and I wrote about the Knicks.
Where is Omar Asik?
We wrote about the Tibbs thing a while back, and our big thing was, how is he going to treat the young guys, right? Like, is he going to – because this is a development situation, right? Like, they've got all these young players. And if Derrick Rose costs Emmanuel Quickley minutes, that's a huge mistake. A huge mistake. If you're trying – if you're getting Derrick Rose because you're just like – we got to make the playoffs. That's a huge mistake. They really are building something decent there, and they didn't give up anything, so that's great. But man, those minutes, those development minutes really do matter for all these young guys. RJ Barrett has been fantastic with the ball in his hands. Does Derrick Rose help you with that at all? You know, unless he's going to be a guy that, you know RJ can handle the primary responsibilities and you're not going to play them together a whole lot. Okay, that's fine. I just really like the young guys on this team, and would love to see it happen. I it's just so predictable. They already got Taj, they got Derrick Rose, and it just seems like the same old people doing the same old stuff all the time.
I'm with you on that. I do think there's an element to it where, if you get these young guys to the playoffs, I do think that experience may end up
it's cool, right?
Being better for them long term, right? I
Derrick Rose getting them to the playoffs.
Look, they're so bad offensively, and and the difference is, and look, this it's small sample, and there's so much noise in on off net rating, right? And on off offensive rating stuff. But if you look at it, I wrote about this for doing the grades on The Athletic, in which I gave the Knicks a B plus. Like as long as Quickley's not sacrificed here with his opportunities, but when Peyton's on the floor, that offense is like 106.1. When Austin Rivers on the floor, that offense is 106.0. When Quickley's on the floor, it's at 108.8, right? That's a massive jump. That's a big leap. I think Derrick Rose adds to that kind of impact because like Peyton and Rivers, like they just don't threaten the defense the way that Quickley has. And I think Rose does it in a better way. And so if the combination is Rose and Quickley as your two lead guards throughout the game, I think we see the offense get boosted by that. But it is Tom Thibodeau. I do have concerns that if they don't move Elfrid Payton, like Trey, you know, sort of suggested there, if they don't move him, Quickley gets squeezed out. And then I think it's a mistake.
What bothers me about this move is that it seems like a Tibbs move. And he shouldn't be in charge of that front office. He has already shown not a front office guy. Like, great coach, fantastic at doing what he does. He has picked that team up.
Hold on.
And given them a direction.
Let me say this. The only time the Timberwolves have made the playoffs without Kevin Garnett involved was because of Tom Thibodeau and the roster he put together. Right?
And what happened
after that?
It didn't
end up sustained. Whatever. Like, okay, so Jimmy Butler didn't want to play with Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns in Minnesota. Right?
I mean, that's understandable.
Yeah.
Wait, he also wanted to get paid.
Like, Jimmy proved to be right there, right?
But he also wanted to get paid.
Yeah, exactly. And Tom Thibodeau had a bad exit there, but it worked for at least a season.
Okay. Well, I guess my bigger point is that coaches have a desire to win right away. And especially Tibbs has always been a win now guy. He hasn't been able to focus on the development in front of the competitiveness right now. And that's one of his greatest strengths is that. But also, like, coaches, you have to stop a coach from going out and getting a Derrick Rose and playing a Derrick Rose. That's why, you know.
If it replaces Elfrid Payton, I disagree. If it replaces Emmanuel Quickley, I agree. Right?
Like, so I guess we'll see, but I just don't trust Tibbs to make that decision based on Quickley's development.
And look, this may be a special case, but this is probably not the right examples to bring up, but like Joakim Noah, Taj Gibson, Derrick Rose, those were young guys who developed under Tom Thibodeau. Right? Like, you're not going to probably get that here with the young guy. But like, I do think there's more of a history of him bringing these young guys along. Jimmy Butler, like, bringing these young guys along. But at a certain point, there is a tipping point where a cost of like, I play all these dudes at all these minutes. And now maybe the potential for a quick decline hurts the development. And so hopefully you would have the front office step in and help balance that out with certain things. However, we've seen that in the past in Chicago also didn't work out too well, right? Like that, like there are concerns. I just don't think it's fair to say a blanket statement of Tom Thibodeau can't do this because look what happened in Minnesota. No. Look what happened what's happening in New York. Those guys wouldn't play defense in Minnesota. This team with a bunch of guys who should not be good defensively as a unit are one of the better defenses in the league. I think that might have been a Wolves thing more than a Tibbs thing on some level.
That's maybe a fair point. And maybe we're overreacting to a really minor acquisition.
Oh, for
of
sure.
A guy
yeah,
who's like, going to come off
come
the
on.
Bench and maybe
no,
just
a guy who's the seventh or eighth guy on a good team.
Guys, we can't react enough. Inject these transactions into my veins.
That is true. Hey, look, the Knicks are relevant again. The Knicks matter. They're in the playoff race. They are actually competitive. Tibbs deserves a lot of credit for
that. The language there. I love you searching for like, what can I say that's not going to be an overstatement, but will still be respectful.
I am not a hater, Dave. I respect the eighth place Knicks.
Yeah, because Jamal Murray's not on the Knicks. That's why you don't hate him.
Hey, Jamal Murray is much better than anyone on the Knicks.
That's respect.
Yeah, that's, well, I don't know, man. I'm not even a Julius Randle guy, but I immediately thought
Julius Jokic. Yeah. Just don't take the ball out of his hands, please. Julius Randle is a revelation, man. That guy has been awesome this year. And this is my thing is just look, you're not going to be a good team if you're the Knicks, and that's fine, but you could be an okay team. That's a lot of fun with a lot of hope. I mean, God, like Knicks fans just seem like they're having more fun this year than any time I can remember. It's a really fun team. I just don't want to see it ruined.
I just need more Quickley floaters, man. That dude, float game is unreal.
I'd like to see him get to the basket more, but I'm with you. It is fun.
Yeah, it's Tony Parker-esque.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. All right, before we go, we do have that Luka-Steph shootout from Saturday night. Waz, you did mention that your take on Steph in the Warriors. It's odd that that Oubre followed up a 40-point night with a horrible shooting night. I didn't see that coming, but
well, it's regression.
Nobody could have saw that coming.
No one could have seen
He's
that coming.
He's been a consistent hooper his whole life, so
Waz,
who could have known?
This Steph situation, like, it was brutal. See, like, 57-point effort wasted.
Look,
right?
I watched them very early on in the season, like the third game, and Steph looked incredible. Like, physically, he's there. He's there where he was in 2016, 2015, 2017. He's there physically. Obviously, we know he has the mental part of the game down. Like, he's right there. But these dudes, they're not ready for this. They're not ready to be good. It's just not. And it's not Steph's fault. He's playing incredibly. He's still one of the best players in the league, right? Like, in nut crunching time, I want Steph Curry on my team, taking shots with the ball in his hand, all of that. But in the meantime, Kelly Oubre and Andrew Wiggins have to hit shots.
And that's a sad statement.
Did you hear what I just said?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, man. Hey, hold on. Wiggins Kelly Island Oubre is
and Andrew
up here,
Wiggins
baby.
Have to hit shots.
You got to stop lumping these two together.
Well, yeah, obviously Oubre shooting in the 20s from three. But yes, you know what I mean.
Andrew Wiggins, a sniper at 38.7% from three. Sniper. Kidding me? It's the healthiest 18 points a game you've ever seen. That's not true. I immediately regret saying that out loud. I do wonder, I can't believe I'm saying this, Trey, does Draymond Green need to score more? Like yes. Shoot more?
Yes. No, he has to. It's time. It's time. I mean, for the Draymond apologists, including myself, you only can gawk off his IQ so much and the little things. Well, Steph needs help, bro. We need you to add a new thing to the bag of tricks. And I don't know. I mean, I personally challenge Draymond Green to turn it up a notch. Just give us 13 points a game. It don't have to be 20. Just give us a consistent 13 to 15, bro. Because Steph, I don't know how long you're going to be able to keep it up. You're going to run him down to the ground by the time Clay gets back.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Also, I forgot during this Knicks discussion. Oh, my God. Did you guys see the restricted area this past week? Waz? We had Jerry Ferrara, the biggest Knicks fan there is.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Think like a man. Entourage, power.
Think
legendary
like a man,
New Yorker. Think like a man, too. Forgot he was in that sequel. Yeah, man, he's really excited about the Knicks. And if you've ever... He is the stereotypical Knicks fan. Like, overly optimistic, always excited about the team. Any glimmer of hope, he's over the moon. Like, this man's moods go according to the Knicks and how they're doing. And so it was dope to have him on the show, talk about the young guys who obviously he loves. He loves Tibbs, how he has the guys playing with consistent effort, which is underrated in this league, honestly. But, like, teams that play hard every single night, like, that's a skill. But yeah, Jerry is just he's so pumped about the team, and I think his enthusiasm is infectious. So please go check out the restricted area. It was our first guest ever, and Jerry was just great. Phenomenal.
Shout out to Jerry. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of the Basket Buds on the Athletic NBA Show. Make sure you check out the rest of the week with Tampering, Hoops Adjacent, Point of Contention, Nerdist She Wrote. Make sure you subscribe to the Athletic. Listen to all the pods. Daily Ding, No Dunks, House of Strauss, all the team-specific pods. Make sure you check out the Restricted Area on the Athletics YouTube channel and check out all the fantastic coverage of the NBA and the sports world in general as you get the fallout of the Super Bowl, in which, I can't believe it, we're recording this hours before it happened. The Chiefs, like 50-3. Who knew? Who knew? Or, hey, Tom Brady did it again. Who knew? So see, now we're covered for both outcomes. For Dave, for Jay, for Trey, for Waz, for Jade, I'm Zach. Keep it locked in on The Athletic.